Speak Sport, the podcast for women fluent in sport. It is going to be such a great time on the show today because I am joined by the founder of Fairbreak Global, an incredible sport movement that we're going to be chatting about today. And maybe you as our listener already know about Fairbreak and you were tuning in to your TVs or, you know, online or YouTube, and you were just watching all the games that were taking place during the tournament that was had out in Hong Kong just recently. And it's so exciting because a second tournament happening in September out in America. And I'm joined by the founder of Fairbreak, Sean Martin. And Sean, it is so great to actually connect with you and to hear from you yourself today. And I'm just so grateful that we can do this and for your time. So welcome to the show today.
Thanks, Lauren. It's very nice to talk to you.
Now, obviously, you know, this year was actually quite really special and cool because Supersport here in South Africa decided that they would just air Fairbreak, which was really nice because then obviously we could watch it on our TVs. And the tournament was just so exciting. Of course, there were actually a lot of South Africans involved, and not only just on the field, but also, you know, as coaches and support staff. But I want to know from you, maybe for those who don't know, where exactly did Fairbreak come from? What was birthed in your heart all those years ago? I know it's been about 15 years that this has been something you've been stewarding, really a movement, and we keep calling it that. But how did this come about for you? Because when we talk about women in sport, often we think of women in sport, but you are an incredible champion for women, and especially through the vehicle of sport and cricket. How did this happen for you?
Well, it did start over 15 years ago, and cricket was always my main sport. But I did have a career coaching in other sports, and also came across a lot of professional female athletes, managed a couple of them at different times, and then fell back into cricket with some corporate contacts of mine, and actually started using Alex Blackwell and Lisa Stelaker and other Australian players in corporate cricket matches to showcase their talent, and also to pay them, because there were no contracts for women in Australia back when we started. I did more work with Lisa, wrote her book with her in 2012, which we launched in Mumbai. And we'd been monitoring the growth of the women's game and the quality of the play. And when she retired in 2013 in Mumbai at the World Cup, she was the number one ranked player in the world and the highest paid female player in the world on $15,000 a year Australian.
Yeah.
And that included 15 public appearances. And I just felt that was abhorrent, really, that people with this much talent giving up the amount of time that they were really, it was comparable to what the male players were doing, but their remuneration and the services around them were so poor. So we set about launching what was called WICL, the Women's International Cricket League, with a view to having a global T20 tournament for women.
Mm-hmm.
And that pushed Cricket Australia to start the WBBL and the ECB to start the CIRS Super League. But we were perceived sort of incorrectly as rebels or disruptors of the game, which was disappointing because we were really just trying to add a level of opportunity for women that didn't exist.
Yeah.
So subsequent to that, I started filming a little documentary series with Lisa and Jeff Lawson in New Zealand in 2015 called Fair Break, which was a play on the Australian term now, fair go, you know, opportunity, equality, all of those sorts of things, which was really the space we were starting to work in. So that was the formation of that idea. And Lisa subsequently left the business because she wanted to pursue a commentary career. And there was a perception, quite rightly, and I supported this with her, that, you know, she may have not got that career had she stayed with what was perceived to be, you know, sort of a reactionary or a rebel group, which was so far from the truth, it wasn't funny, but that was the way we were sort of perceived. Mm-hmm. So I then changed everything into Fairbreak. I dropped the WICL tag and And we pursued this notion of, opportunity and equality through cricket. And also, it's such a diverse and inclusive game with, second largest participation team sport in the world. And then it was about a 7-year battle to get recognition with the ICC to stage a tournament, which is, through the efforts of Mr. Venkatesh and Cricket Hong Kong, that came about. But the concept really was formed way back in 2012, 2013. That really didn't change very much. It was just how are we going to get this thing on the park, really. So that's the short story.
But it's such an interesting one as well, because often when we look at tournaments, when we look at realities that we see actually unfolding in front of us, and it's great, and we see the outcome of everything that's been happening in the background for many, many years. So sometimes we can just witness, what is in front of us as spectators, as viewers, as people that maybe get involved now at this moment in time. But, it has really been such an incredible amount of work that you and many other people have put in. And like you said, being known as a disruptor or a rebel, it's not the truth. And yet, that is there, that was there. And it's just incredibly fascinating to hear this story. But then also just, I have a sense of obviously just remarkable gratitude for the work that has gone in over the years and everything that I'm sure, that was probably said and done that was really difficult and having to overcome those obstacles. And it's really incredible. And I know that it's been such a journey. How do you find it now? Now we're in 2023, obviously a couple of years later, there's a lot of talk obviously now around the world, not only about cricket, but women's football, everything about women's sport. There's so many conversations that's being had. We know there's a lot of work still to be done, but we know now there is almost an interest in going, okay, how can we better women's games, matches? How can we support athletes? Yes, it still needs to go far, but how do you feel in 2023 that we're doing on this? And do you feel that people's perceptions have changed? Is it now no longer the sense of, hey, Sean the rebel, but actually Sean has had a vision and he's actually a pioneer. And
nice of you to say those things. Very nice of you to say those things, Lauren, but I don't sort of get too carried away with all of that. There's a lot of people that have worked with me on this for a long time. So it's very much a team effort to get it to the point that it's at now.
Yeah. So do you feel like that the perceptions have changed and that there's an amazing team that you have around you that are doing such incredible work?
Oh yeah, I've got some amazing people at work with me, and they are committed every single day to doing what we do. It's amazing, really, the number of people that are so invested in what we do and how we do it. We do a lot of things different because we offer opportunity right across all aspects of the game, all aspects of business. In commentary, in coaching, in management. In our media team, every aspect of what we do, we're looking to create opportunity and also to stretch people, I suppose, a little bit. In other words, to look at where they could go with the particular skill set that they've got. Mm-hmm. In answer to your previous sort of question statement, there is a long way to go in terms of any sort of real equality. In terms of sport between men and women. I mean, there's been a lot of great steps forward, but there is a long, long way to go in terms of getting people to understand that the value of women's sport, both from a skills perspective, from a spectator's perspective, and from a financially viable perspective. All of those three things have still got a long way to go.
Mm. I actually love that because it's a sobering message and it's one that we actually do need to hear. And just recently I was chatting to one of South Africa's, you know, best professional mountain bikers, and she's just achieved so much. And yet here in 2023, she's actually sitting unsponsored without a sponsor. And again, it was a really great conversation that we could have because she was speaking about the reality of achieving so much, which she's only in her late 20s, but yet teams won't take her on because they're saying, well, you're too old. But yet the men that they take on are in their 30s. And she's like, I'm only in my 20s and I'm too old.
I think that's a great lack of awareness around men's and women's physiology as well. That's a huge misunderstanding of the way men and women as athletes and and how their bodies perform as they age. So, you know, and there's a massive amounts of research around that in terms of, you know, many women have much greater longevity in professional sport than men. And that's one of the things that we look at with what we do. I mean, we did the first with Professor Deirdre McGee from the University of Wollongong. We did a groundbreaking study in Dubai into breast health and sports bras in cricket. And Professor McGee continued that work in Hong Kong. And that had never been done before in cricket, but it's such an important piece of sporting equipment for a performance for women in any sport. And of the 54 women of the 90 that were fully assessed in Dubai, you'll be fascinated by this, Lauren, as a woman, only four of the women were wearing the appropriate sports bra for cricket for them. And that included the best resourced players in the world from England, Australia, South Africa, New Zealand. So that work continues with Professor McGee. She was in Hong Kong with us, and she'll be in Dallas with us later in the year. So we think that's a very important piece of work, and we'll continue to do those pieces of work through the tournament, you know, because you know, there's a lot of shoulder injuries for women in cricket, and they're wearing the right sports bra, their posture is better, there's more shoulder flexion, there's less injury. So there's lots of aspects to what we do.
This is so fascinating to me, and I'm definitely going to go on the internet after this and go and Google her, because this is incredibly fascinating when what we're talking about, and this work is so important. It's actually a thought that I've had when I have watched cricket, to be honest, of what kind of sports bra do they use? And I think I'm not the only woman. Sounds like a very strange conversation we're not having, but I'm sure I'm not the only person that has thought that when they're watching, because we know physiologically everybody's built differently. Some people have like an athletic build where, you know, they need something else. Other people are built differently. Other women are, you know, experience different things. So some need different kinds of tools to be there and good and supported during the game. And I've often actually thought that, and it was a conversation I had with my husband when I was watching the WPL. What kind of sports equipment do they use? Because, you know, even if you're not playing cricket, you're going to the gym or you are correct. Exercising. So this is not information that we're given.
No. And none of the players from the test playing nations who have, you know, been in cricket all their, you know, for 10 or 15 years had ever had a proper fitting done. So I know it's a strange thing for us to be talking about now. It was more a demonstration of the extension of the work that we do. It's not just, we're really a social impact business now that just happens to play cricket. You know, all our players are fully contracted and paid. Many of them have gone back to their own countries with the money they've earned and built their own homes and put their children in private schools. So there's a whole range of things that we do. Our players play in uniforms made of recycled plastic. We don't accept money from betting or gambling, which is one of the reasons it's very difficult to fund what we do. But we have a pure sport ethos because those, you know, betting and gambling are intrinsically linked with domestic violence and family dislocation. So we really don't feel that we can be taking money from that area when we're working in a female space.
I love that. That is incredible.
Yeah.
And it's very true what you said. As someone who was a trauma therapist for abused women for many years before going into journalism, betting, gambling, alcohol, as you know, it all goes together, and it just impacts families, domestic violence, like you said. So I love the fact that it's an ethos that you have at Fairbreak, and it's such a powerful one. And I really respect that and love this. And what we're talking about the sports bras, it's a different conversation, but it's so impactful and it's so powerful. And one of the things I also really love about the tournaments, the cricket tournaments, is that you also invite players and use players from associate nations. So now we know, like in South Africa and obviously Australia, New Zealand, England, we are such big cricketing nations, and we love our cricket, and it's like a, I don't know, it's like a highlight when you get to go and watch the games. It's amazing. And obviously having the T20 World Cup, Women's World Cup here just recently just exploded the support for women's cricket even more in South Africa. It's phenomenal. And obviously I've said to everybody that one of the things I want to harp on is that opening game between South Africa and Sri Lanka on the 11th of February broke the record attendance for a women's cricket match in the history of South Africa. And we were able to do that together by getting in the stadium, supporting women's cricket, supporting the sport. And we can't allow that to just now be gone. You know, we need to continue doing that. But there are associate nations where maybe cricket isn't our highlight sport. And, you know, you have nations that where there are incredible cricket players and you invite them to be part of Fairbreak, and they're actually phenomenal players. We get to witness them. And tell us a bit about that as well, because maybe some people don't realize that that is a huge part of the tournaments. And we see players from America or Hong Kong or Thailand or Oman or Rwanda, Zimbabwe. These are countries where there are phenomenal players, but they just don't get the opportunities.
Yeah, well, that's the whole ethos of what we do. You know, it's a global, we're the only global T20 tournament, male or female, in the world. So, you know, in Hong Kong, we had 37 different nations involved in the tournament. I mean, the Falcons at one stage had 11 players on the field, fielding from 11 different countries.
Wow.
Yeah, women's cricket and men's cricket are two different games. So you've got to get your head around that to start with. And the audience for women's cricket is quite disparate. It's not always where the men's audience is. So, you know, in Nepal, when the Nepalese women's team play, you know, 10,000 people turn out to watch them. You know, so that's just one example. You know, our Bhutanese player only plays men's cricket in Bhutan because she's too good to play anything else. So many of these players are highly skilled, just as skilled as anyone from one of the major test-playing nations. What they lack is opportunity and game awareness. So because they just don't play enough. But the skill sets are very, very high. And you've seen that in the tournament. You know, I think eight of the top 10 bowling performances in Hong Kong came from associate nation players. So we don't, I jokingly fine people in our business $10 if they use the word associate, because I don't want the stigma attached to a player or a perception that because they're from a particular country, they lack a skill. So we just see players from wherever they happen to be. And some of the players from those more smaller nations or associate nations, if we're going to use that term, are on higher contracts than players from major test playing nations, because in fact they're better. So we don't contract on where you're from. We contract on your skill.
And that's amazing. It's a powerful reality. We also saw that during this tournament in Hong Kong, I mean, so many of the players that received player of the match were from those nations.
Yes, so you
I
don't want to
don't want
say
to say
associate
associate
now
now
either.
because I don't want to get fined. Don't find me.
I do it just as a bit of a, I do it as a more as a reminder to people to not fit to think a little bit more carefully about are they making a judgment based on that word as opposed to just looking at the skill set of the player.
Exactly. And one of the things that I reflect on as well was the women's T20 World Cup. And, you know, when a lot of people saw the Ireland girls, you know, the Irish players come on, it was kind of like, oh, okay, it's Ireland. But the truth be told, that those Irish players, the women's players, are phenomenal. They are
Absolutely.
Totally my favorite team. You know, I had to be careful with that. But I was like, they are totally incredible. I mean, Gabby Lewis is incredible. Orla Pendergast is incredible.
Player.
And Laura Delaney. I mean, all of them, we can just sit here talking about them. They are incredible. And obviously the Western Province women's cricket coach that I know personally, she is now out in Ireland busy coaching and coaching. I think it's the team that Gabby's the captain of, and it's just slipped my mind. But the truth is they are phenomenal players. And like you said, sometimes there's like a word, you know, that people use. And then it's kind of like, oh, okay, it's just them from that place, you know, but it's actually the skill set. And I suppose that's a life lesson. It's not just in cricket. It's in everything that we do in life. We can, because someone is a certain, does a certain career, or it has a certain level of something, we can quickly just put a word on them, and then we see them through that lens, not as they truly are, but as we see them to be through how we interpret that. And
just see them as cricketers. They're a cricketer. That's that. They're a player.
Exactly.
That's what they are, you know. And as soon as you start to make, as soon as you take that, and we even have to work with our coaches along those lines as well, because they've got to take a leap of faith sometimes, you know, because they don't know the player as well. It's a coaching challenge for our coaches. They get a squad of 15 players, usually 12 or 13 different nationalities in that squad. They've never been confronted with that type of squad before, so they've got to get, you know, and it's an interesting dynamic. And we kept a lot of the players together for this second tournament because we wanted to keep building that sort of team identity with each team. There'll be about 30-odd new players that come into Dallas because some players are unavailable and they've got national duties, and there's a whole range of circumstances. Plus, we want to extend the opportunity for players.
Yeah.
But one of the differences with us is that we will never have a draft. Jeff Lawson, Alex Blackwell, Sana Mir, and myself manage the list of players. And once you've played for a team in our tournament, you will all, once you've been a Falcon, you're always a Falcon. You don't get swapped to another team.
Okay.
So you might miss a tournament, or you might miss two tournaments because of international duties with your country or family circumstances or whatever. If you're invited back, you'll be invited back as a Falcon, as the team you originally started in. And in talking to the players, they love that because they've already created friendships and identity around each of those teams.
Yeah. I think that's so important as well. Instead of moving and then getting to know different people, getting to find your space. And I think as someone, as a journalist that has worked in many different countries, what we call developing nations, and worked in a lot of different villages with different women telling their stories, for me, there's a lot of cultural realities you have to understand, and cultural aspects that stop women from being able to fully be present to show up in sport. Because in some nations, it's like, girls don't play sport. You know, girls definitely don't play cricket, and they definitely don't play sport. And it's an understanding of what these women have actually, many of them, been through themselves in order to be here today, in order to be part of this. And and so much respect and gratitude for them and their journeys that they've been on, which is amazing. And I think that that's part of what makes Fair Break so incredible. As I really want to be careful about this word associate, but to have these women, no, it's fine. I'm getting it out of my vocabulary now. It's to have these women that overcome these obstacles to be where they are. And we think of even people that you know, maybe a lot of listeners know, like Shefali Verma, who had to overcome major obstacles herself, disguised as a boy to play cricket for many years. And we see her having won, you know, led the team under 19 team here in South Africa World Cup, you know, to victory and to hold that trophy. And to understand their journeys, to understand women's journeys is powerful as well. And I think that's what we see with this tournament. We can start following players on social media, start connecting with their stories as well. And it's just such an incredible reality. And Sean, I want to ask you a final question. Are you excited about what's going to be happening in Dallas in September? Of course you're excited, but what is your expectation for the tournament that's going to be happening? And what can we expect as you know, like spectators and viewers and people that are excited about it? I'm going
to
be telling all my friends that's out in Texas that they must go and support.
You'll see the same team brands playing. You'll see probably 30 new players across those six teams. And I think what you'll see over time in America is women's cricket will do what women's soccer has done there. There'll be an explosion because it has no competition. Women's soccer has been incredibly successful in America because it doesn't compete with the NFL. Women's cricket will be the same. It's not competing with men's baseball. Men's cricket will compete with that. But women's cricket, it's an open field, pardon the pun. And we think it'll be exceptional. So we're very much embracing Texas with the whole theme. The expat community will be very important to us in America, but we're also determined to move the game into the mainstream American sporting psyche, which is what we feel we have to do over there, and we feel we can do that through the women's game. I'd just like to go back to just for the point you were making before about, you know, the security and the stories around the female players. When you've got so many players from so many different countries, you're exactly right with what you say in terms of the cultural differences that we have to take into account. And it's also one of the deeper reasons that we want to keep players, you know, as part of the team that they always played for, because when you've got 12 or 13 different nationalities in a team, that these a lot of the women have built strong bonds and have now got mentors in those teams. So if you're playing for the Sapphires, captained by Sana Mir, Sana's an incredible woman and part of our management team and a great mentor to these women. So there's a deeper piece of work going on here that's totally unrelated to cricket.
Yeah.
So we've now got players from very small nations who are in a WhatsApp group with Sana, who can talk to her about a whole range of women's issues that have got nothing to do with cricket.
Yeah.
And that's a very, very powerful piece of work that underpins what we do. We talk to our players a lot. That's why we play 2 weeks, one city, one venue, 20 games. You know, women can bring their families. You know, many of them have got young children now. They come, you know, because 2 weeks, it's what their tennis playing counterparts do or their golfing counterparts do. They don't want to be away for 6 or 8 weeks. They think about it differently. You talk to the players, ask them how they like to play. They love the fact that they're staying in one hotel. They're going to one ground. You know, there's and they're getting paid well for a short period of time.
Yeah. And that's something that I absolutely love about the tournaments as well, is even the commentating team, you see their families, see their little children, and it feels like it's family. And it is so important, like you said as well, and it's for men and women, but for women who are playing, it is very difficult. And I know this from personally knowing athletes, it's so difficult for them to leave like a baby that's 6 months old or their children behind for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It is It's something that as a mom, you really have to wrap your heart around. It's the sacrifice that many female athletes make. But I think it's such a beautiful thing that you guys do. And that is why this, not only the tournaments, but Fair Break is so powerful and it's important in our world. And not just in our sporting world, but in our world, there is so much that we can learn and take from it that we will grow from. And Sean, I want to say thank you so much, not only for spending this time with me, because it's been so inspiring, so enlightening, almost trying to think of the word that's not emotional, but that's kind of pulls on your sense of heart and feelings to say, this is different. This is beautiful. This is amazing. This is something that so many people, I'm sure, will want to be part of in the years to come. And so I want to say thank you for this, and not only for your time, but also for everything that you've done, but everything that will still be done, everything that will still come. And just thank you so much for being here and for sharing with me today.
Thank you, Lauren. And thank you for, that's very nice, those words you say. And as I said, there's a lot of people involved, not just me. Mm. And I'm very grateful for their hard work and their contribution and their drive, really. Yeah. And it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you very much for the opportunity.